The world as we know it is at a tipping point in this fourth industrial revolution, and today's guest has a front seat in building strategic partnerships in the world of work and technology to move us towards this bright future. Michael Lille is the Senior Managing Director at Stan Technologies, an organization that is at the core of the tech services market, equipped with young, experienced talent that is focused on solving enterprise-level challenges, leveraging advanced AI and data solutions. In this conversation, we look at the history of tech advancement over the past few decades, unpack the current state of the labor market on the African continent, and the megatrends that are driving digital transformation in a rapidly evolving economy. This conversation will allow you to understand what it truly takes not just to equip young people with talent, but also deploy them to spaces where they are needed and can make the most impact. Join us for yet another insightful chat in the boardroom that rests at the heart of innovation and opportunity as we delve into the strategies, initiatives, and collaborations shaping the future of work in this digital age.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are, whoever you are. Welcome to the Boardroom Banter podcast. My name is Sean Karanja. I am your co-host here, and I am joined in the boardroom by none other than Boniface Omina. Boniface recently has acquired a bunch of paperwork, and as we speak to him now, he has joined the illustrious realm of adulting, where now we're no longer students and we have to go and wage war in the marketplace, build stuff, solve problems, and pay rent. Boniface, how are you doing?
Sean, you described this stage of life in such a rosy way. It's not close to the reality of the situation. But yeah.
You're holding up well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I actually am. I was speaking to some friends the other day and they asked me, so how are you feeling now, you know? And I'm happy that I had come back to Kenya after we finished, and I've had like 3 months to adjust to being back home. And so there's some students who just got back to their countries after graduation. So I'm sure now they're navigating that adjustment curve and so on and so forth. So I was telling my friends, I feel like I'm in a better position compared to other people, just a more privileged position and headspace to think through some ideas. I've thought through some of these decisions and now I'm in a position to just execute on a lot of them. So yeah, that's how I've been doing.
Definitely. I love to hear that. All is well on my end. And I think the guest that we have today in the boardroom is someone who could speak to a large extent about the future of work. Where are we going? How do we position ourselves to be not only effective, but yeah, pursue opportunities out there and build careers and lives that we could be proud of? When I look at his CV and a lot of the stuff that he's been up to, he reminds me of our good friend from LinkedIn, Steve Cardigan, who was LinkedIn's first head of HR and, you know, really led the company towards scaling to be a global behemoth in the tech space and really was working with people there. And so our guest today has had similar experience and is currently spearheading one of the coolest tech companies to recently start up, and they're growing phenomenally, Sand Technologies. So without further ado, I would like to introduce today's guest. We have none other than Mr. Michael Lille joining us in here from somewhere in the world. Last I saw, rumor has it you're in Rome. Rumor has it you, I don't know if you were in Qatar or something, or Lagos. Michael is someone who can be found all over the place, building cool stuff. He's currently the Senior Managing Director at Sand Technologies. And previously he's had incredible work working in the people departments, figuring out talent and organization at places like Accenture, Deloitte, and Ernst & Young. Also had a stint at the United Nations. Michael is someone who knows how people plug into organizations and how organizations can leverage talent to create long-lasting impact. Michael, welcome to the boardroom. It's a privilege to have you here.
Thank you.
How's everything going?
It's going extremely well. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. And thank you for all the nice words. I hope I can live up to your expectations here.
That's always a tricky part, living up to expectations, not only on this podcast, but in life as well. Interestingly, most of the guests that tell us, hey, you know, nice words, I hope I can live up to expectations, they usually exceed them. So just from Thank experience.
You. Thank you.
Awesome. So Michael, first of all, where are you calling in from, and what are you currently up to? So if you bumped into a stranger and had to explain who you are, what you're up to, how would you go about doing that?
Well, that's already more than one question, and it's already loaded. I was going to start off by saying my initial answer is very boring. I'm right now in Germany, but then who says that Germany is boring? Maybe you find that sexy. What do I know? So I'm in Cologne, Germany, which is where I officially reside. But yeah, it's only a short interim stint back home. I've just booked my travels for the next 2 weeks that will take me back to Africa across Nigeria, Rwanda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and then back home. That's going to be the next 2 weeks. So back to Mother Africa. And then this very loaded question, explain what you're doing to a 10-year-old. Is that what you're asking me to do? These are the moments when I wish I was my son, who's a doctor. And that is a very simple thing to say, right?
Right.
Try to explain to a 10-year-old what you're doing. I'm not so sure about the 10-year-old, but what am I doing? Well, you've already let the cat out of the bag. So I'm working for Centec. At Centec, I have the privilege to build strategic partnerships with large organizations that Centec aspires to work with. And yes, very excited. You called us out as one of the exciting developments in the tech services market. And I think we are. We have an exciting value proposition for the market, and we have a story to tell. In terms of value proposition at this moment in time, we are at the core right now, entering the tech services market with a couple of hundred super experienced industrial AI experts that can truly bring cutting edge solutions to various industries. And at the same time, we have this story to tell around building the domestic champion in Africa, becoming the largest tech services company that actually is energized and fueled by African talent, which I think is a very exciting story.
That sounds fantastic, Michael. And I can't wait to learn more about that over the course of this conversation. One thing that we love to appreciate on this podcast is a lot of the work that we find ourselves in today, you know, at this age is as a result of a lot of our early childhood experiences and, you know, some of the environments and places that we grew up in. I was journaling the other day and reflecting on some of the books that I used to read when I was growing up in New Jersey as a child. And these books not only allowed me to step into completely new worlds, right, just through the kind of content that I used to read, but it also allowed me to experience and learn about different aspects of myself. And those books, the shows that we used to watch as a kid, I think built my understanding of things like leadership, things like, you know, building relationships with people, dreams, you know, the goals that we want to accomplish in life. I'd love to understand how your early childhood environment looked like, Michael, and some of the lessons that you picked from there and some of the parts of yourselves that you can tie back to certain experiences. For us to understand who you are today and the work that you do, what would we need to know about some of these early experiences that you had?
Well, two things come to mind. Well, first of all, I'm super excited to hear that you read books in your childhood. And this may sound like a funny statement, but coming from my generation, it feels like more books than ever are being sold and bought. The role of the book is not the same as it used to be at the time that I received my education, my socialization, and my upbringing. I mean, try to imagine a world where you go through your entire primary, secondary, and even tertiary education without any personal computing, without any mobile devices, without any search engine, without any internet. So, I mean, I'm old enough. I know I look much younger. I know. I appreciate what you're saying, but essentially, the first time I used a personal computer was when I wrote my master thesis, and at the time I borrowed the personal computer of my girlfriend at the time. I wouldn't have had the money to buy one myself. So to think of a childhood or upbringing and teenage years of a person who grows up pre third industrial revolution, 1980s, computing comes up, and access to knowledge and education is basically through books, through reading. It's a different world. You know, if I wanted to do research during my studies, I had to go through these huge physical catalogs where you went through small pieces of paper and you were looking for keywords, and then you had to literally go to the shelves and pull out the book and see, oh, is this actually what I'm looking for? No, it's not. Let's put it back and do some more research. And, you know, it's a different era. But somehow we loved it. So I'm still addicted to books. If you were sitting in my living room, you would see shelves with books surrounding me. Obviously it was a different paced world. So we've since experienced not only the third industrial revolution with the rise of the internet and of personal computing, which has changed everything, including the effect of work. And now we're already in through the first phase of the fourth industrial revolution. Everything has changed around this. So I don't know if this answers your question, but I appreciate the innovation that I see popping up during this course of the fourth industrial revolution, as you know, it probably still excites me more than somebody who has grown up in the past 20 years, because for me, it's still a much bigger development, because I've seen very different times, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And I think given that you have perspective of, let's call it a pre-computer world, and a post-computer world. I mean, because for context, right, when I think of my upbringing, we did have computers, like, you know, early high school, etc. Even primary school, like we had PCs around. Mom or dad had a laptop. So, I mean, like you became aware of, hey, you know, you could type stuff out. You could use a search engine, etc., etc. I think what was interesting to see in our generation was that shift from, you know, just PC computing to mobile computing, and now the advent of mobile phones, touch screens, apps, wireless headphones, and, you know, all these things. So for us, that's one big tech change that we could speak to having witnessed. But definitely going from pre-PC to like PC and smartphones, etc., I feel like that's an interesting adjustment to have seen. But I think also by virtue of you working in consulting, you've been privy to seeing a lot of these mega trends playing out. You've been working across the world in a multitude of various organizations that, you know, oftentimes tend to be at the forefront of leading change, right? So, you know, the Accentures, the Deloittes, etc., you're really privy to a lot of information about some of the trends that are shaping how the world is moving. And now more than ever at SAND, you guys are now working on the implementation side of things like AI, et cetera. Very fascinating stuff. So I'm curious to hear from you, right? Are there any mega trends or emerging technologies or ways that you're seeing the world going in that is really shaping your approach to strategy at work, or, you know, shaping the different projects that you decide to take on at SAND? What's that looking like for you?
Okay, let me take the second part of your question first, around how I see work shaping up. Okay, I mean, Third Industrial Revolution brought personal computing and the internet. I mean, obviously more than that, but those two were fundamental changes to everyday lives, everybody's lives, but also to the way we work. And one of the very powerful changes that it brought about in terms of the global economy and the inclusion of large populations in the global economy was obviously that it drove globalization of efforts and brought the rise of China, first China and then others in Southeast Asia, and then ultimately of India. And if you want to grossly simplify, China managed to become the factory of the world, and India managed to become the service center, at least the technology service center, and even the BPO service center of the world, together with the Philippines and others. So the big changes came about, and it led to the wealth of the world, quite frankly, starting to be redistributed. Something that many of us got very excited about. The fourth industrial revolution, now the consultant is talking, if I look at the project we've sold to our clients during this time, a lot of this was about moving end-to-end processes into the cloud. So working with our blue chip clients on taking their end-to-end processes and moving them into the cloud, into new ERP world, if you will, creating that one version of the truth in terms of data, data about their internal processes, data about the products, data about their research, but most importantly, data about their consumers, customers, subscribers, patients, whoever it is they serve or ultimately sell services or products to, so that they can gain insights. And I always had a little bit of an ambivalent feeling about our projects, because I after a while I knew that our clients would wind up in a place where they were going to be slightly disappointed. What am I trying to articulate here? So we would go through efforts of taking them into the cloud, implementing a new ERP solution, SAP, Oracle, you name it, whatever it was at the time, and Workday, and so on. And once we successfully completed the project, it dawned on our clients that this was not the end of the story, this was just the beginning of the story. Because just having all your data and all your, insights available in your cloud, great. But now somebody has to use data analysis, data science, to actually harvest these data and make sense of them and build, and use it to build artificial intelligence solutions for certain components of their core processes to actually gain a competitive advantage and be successful in their respective markets and industries. So it's a long-winded way of telling you that
new year, new me. Sounds familiar? Well, one of our goals as podcast hosts has been to get deeper into our bags and a key part of that is learning about diversifying our income and investments. This episode is sponsored by Apex, a cryptocurrency exchange that understands the importance and increasing complexity of investing in the 21st century. And they make it easier and simple to make your first step. Explore the world of opportunities with Apex today.
I think we're at a tipping point of this fourth industrial revolution. Phase one was all about cloud and creating that one version of the truth in terms of data. And phase two, I believe, is now very much about harvesting these data science, and converting it into smart solutions using machine learning and AI to gain a competitive advantage in your respective market. And quite frankly, that's why I'm so excited about where we are with Ascend Tech right now, because that's exactly where we come in, right? In terms of work as we know it, much of the public discussion around the current phase is a weird one, because people are talking about, will there be any work for humans left to be done, or will machines do all of our work? We have these discussions on German talk shows almost every night, if you were to entertain them on your TV.
That's such a German thing to do.
Yeah, it's pathetic, because it again, it's based on a complete misunderstanding. See, the changes to work as we know it are happening on a continuum between automation and augmentation. So the first phase of the fourth industrial revolution has actually seen a lot of automation, as previously already in the third industrial revolution. Yes, a lot of work has been automated. If you were to go back to that plant where I used to earn the money so that I could go to university like some 30 years ago, yeah, not even a third of the number of people are employed there anymore. So we now have so-called CPSs, cyber physical systems, with a central processing unit and sensors and cameras, and a lot runs on its own, and a couple of humans are left and a control room to manage production lines that used to be manned by dozens of humans. That is not the world we live in anymore. But we're actually not seeing that much in terms of automation right now. What we see much more is professional work being augmented, especially now with the use of AI. So we see highly professionally trained individuals being capable to do more, or to do what they've previously done more efficient and more effectively. I mean, I can tell you a funny story. Well, it's funny now, it wasn't at the time. I had a bad accident speaking on a podium in Switzerland at the business school I was teaching at the time. I fell off the stage after the podium discussion. And I fell on my face, and I broke my cheekbone and my nose and whatever. I looked really bad. And I woke up in a Swiss hospital, and this doctor was bending over me. And I said to her, "Oh, doctor, I'm so happy you're human." And she thought I had brain damage, right? I mean, she thought, like, why do I say that? Why do I say I'm so happy you're human? And I explained to her, I said, "Listen, I was just on a podium talking about the future of work and how there are machines that can cut more precisely and stitch more precisely than humans." So she didn't think it was funny. But then after a while, she warmed up to me and she said, "You know, Mr. Lani, I'm not too worried at all. I'm a doctor and I will always be needed. But if you have an image, if you have an MRT, a CRT, an X-ray, whatever it is, you actually want me to use AI to look at it, because it's seven times more likely that I will miss out on something that AI will not miss out on." So what AI really does, it helps me to do what I'm doing on, if you will, on steroids. I don't think she used that expression, but you get my point. So what we're seeing at this moment in time is not really professional jobs being replaced, but we're seeing human capabilities being augmented and humans being empowered, or not empowered. Yeah, what they can do, leveraging AI and machine learning and ChatGPT and whatever it is at the tip of the fingers is so much more superior what they used to be able to do that it's not a replacement, but it's a significant improvement. And then on top of that, quite frankly, a lot of new jobs are created that we don't even have fancy names yet for. And yeah, they will be hard to explain to a 10-year-old, but then there will be a point where a 10-year-old will easily understand what you're talking about and a 70-year-old won't anymore. Yeah, that's the world we're living in.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. And I think it's interesting to hear you paint such a vivid picture of, I think, back to what you said earlier of imagine, you know, growing up at a time where you don't have access to a personal computer and going through school. And so you've taken us back in history, and now you're explaining the present as we look to the potential changes in future. I think it's that timeline, trying to visualize that timeline is what I think I find myself trying to do right now, and more so trying to see what role can I play over the course of history, for lack of a way to put it. And I think I'm sitting here as a recent graduate looking into the world of work and trying to figure out, you know, which part of this value chain am I going to step into. But then an added layer of considering the fact that I am African and I want to work in Africa, and I'm interested to understand how is this conversation different from an African perspective. I think a way in which you can speak to this, Michael, is just giving us a bit of insight into why you chose to work on the African continent. What is it that drew you here? What do you see happening here that's not happening in other parts of the world, hence the potential that Africa has?
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent question. So, I mean, again, I was around 25, or plus 25 years ago when, during this third industrial revolution, China and India were starting to enter the global economy. Like, you know, China was huge, has always been huge, but it didn't really feature in the global economy when I grew up. So all by a sudden, it became the factory of the world. India became the service center of the world. And I traveled to these countries. I remember vividly, I visited them both in the same month. And I was blown away by the youth in China and in India. Their vibes, their expectations, their eagerness, their willingness to embrace change, their seeing a world of opportunities, right? I thought it was super exciting. And China, they were very different for quite a number of reasons I can't get into now. But why am I so excited about Africa? Well, that's what I see here right now. I think we're entering the African century, if you will. I mean, look at the sheer numbers, right? Every second human that is born at this moment in time is born in Africa, and for the most part in sub-Saharan Africa. And that it has been the case for quite a while. So by 2050, about 60% of the world's population at a working age will reside in Africa. That's just a demographical fact. It's the only continent with population growth. All other continents are stagnant, respectively. Europe is actually shrinking. And if you look at the average age in Germany, the country I reside in, is only rivaled by Japan, is around 47 years, meaning a third of our population is 65 plus. The average, the median age in Africa makes the average African a teenager. You have countries like Mali with 15 years. Kenya, I believe it's 19. So we're clearly entering a phase where the youth of the world sits in Africa. And why do I get excited about Africa? Well, there are a couple of very trivial reasons. I like African music. I go to Bon Appétit concerts.
Let's go. Come on.
There you go. I do appreciate African food. I love African fabrics and fashion. So on a serious note, the trends, the fashion trends, the music trends, and so on, are also set by the youth of the world. I think Ansgar will set the tone in many ways. It's funny right now, if you go out in a shopping mall in Germany and you listen to carefully to the music in the places where you're buying your pants or whatever it is you're buying, I think most Germans in the room would think they're listening to African-American music. When it's really Afro-American music or to some black musician from, I don't know, New York City or California, when they're probably already listening to Davido or Soti Sol or whatever, right? So they don't even recognize this. But back to why I'm excited about Africa. So the demographics are very clear. This is the continent that, quite frankly, will have to provide the talent for the global economy. It's as simple as that. First statement. Second statement, the biggest subtrend in this narrative that we call the future of work, where we say that the digital disruption is changing the way we work, the biggest subtrend in there is that work has become a deliverable. So work used to be measured in terms of input, in terms of efforts, in terms of hours spent to do something. And that's how we, quite frankly, most cases have also compensated people for number of hours per week or whatever it was, right? That's not so relevant anymore. The cloud-enabled work 4.0, if you will, much of it can be done from any place in the world, not everything, but a lot from any place in the world, as long as that place has an individual with the right education, competency, skills, power, and internet access. These are really the ingredients. And that is a big shift. I mean, COVID was the last accelerator, right? I mean, I remember vividly, even in the last week before lockdown here in Germany, I was still a consultant with Accenture at the time. I had conversations with C-suite individuals here, and they would say, oh, Mr. Lahti, it's all very exciting what you're telling us about the future of work, very exciting. But, let me tell you, that remote work thing, that's never going to work for us. Never going to work for us. In our corporate culture, I need to see my people. I need to see that they work. I have to walk past them. And, right? Funny enough, a week later, the same people would call me and say, you know how we had this conversation around remote work? I understand I can close down my company if I don't figure out within the next 48 hours how we actually operate in a remote work environment. Because that is what lockdown meant to them. Right? So COVID was the last accelerator that pushed those that were completely unprepared for this future work into the new world. Now organizations are coming out of this, especially in markets like here in Europe, but also in North America, and going, okay, I've understood that 90% of the work that gets performed in my organization can be performed from any place in the world. And there are certain jobs I cannot find talent for in my market. Where do I look now? And 30 years ago, the answer would have been most cases, places like India, Philippines, whatever. Or we had offshored entire processes in terms of production to China. And I think, again, we're entering the African century. This is where the demographics clearly indicate there's an unlimited pipeline of talent. And that is what we need to enable. So Africa is the place to be. Sorry, that was a lengthy response. Sorry, Sean, go ahead.
No worries. When I think of an endeavor that is close to my heart, maybe it's by virtue of having gone to African Leadership Academy and then African Leadership University, we were always being hit by that demographic and youth dividend statistics here and there, talking about Africa is going to be the talent engine of the world. But one of the interesting things that popped up, and I devoted quite a bit of time to figuring out a solution for, was, yes, we've got this huge youth dividend. Yes, we have, this young, booming population, smart, talented people. But there's a lot of skill development that needs to be done, right? You don't get talented international level employees out of our, you know, currently slightly dilapidated education system. So something needs to be done on the side. And I remember back in 2018 and, you know, a couple of years after that, I was running a startup called Project Exponential. And one of the interesting things that we were doing was building co-curricular programs. So we'd partner with high schools here in Kenya, basically teaching all the stuff I learned at ALA, ALU, et cetera, you know, problem solving, entrepreneurial thinking, how do you present yourself, personal branding, all those little things that make a difference in the workspace. And we found that actually, as much as schools and whatever are trying to develop this talent, there is a huge need for these extracurricular or co-curricular programs that basically are taking people out of traditional education systems and saying, hey, we can't wait for the government to catch up. We need to be pioneering these solutions. And that's what I find very interesting about Sand Tech, right? One of your subsidiaries is ALX. And ALX, for a lot of people who have, you know, possibly heard of ALX, is basically this skills training hub where the future of tech talent is being nurtured at, like, basically for free. I know so many people who have gone through ALX, their software engineering programs, their Salesforce administrator programs, etc. And basically all the different skill sets that a global talent pool will need to be of service to the world. So it's interesting you talked about that supply and demand of, we've got the supply of talent and there's global demand. But I'd like you to speak more to the actual equipping of that talent. And right now at Sand Tech, you guys are doing both equipping and deploying via, you know, these AI projects and implementations projects that you have with all these blue chip companies. I'm interested to see how that works from just like an organizational and strategy standpoint. How are you meeting that supply and demand? And is that a tricky thing to do? Is it a fun thing to do? Is it a nightmare? Is it keeping you up at night, Michael?
So, wow, yeah. I mean, the educational or the training or the, you know, skill acquisition question is another loaded one. Let me start out by saying you've made a couple of good observations about the educational system in Africa. If I can bitch for a moment, we're getting everything wrong about this here too. So if you, not everybody would agree with this, but if you were to measure a national education system in terms of, does it provide the local economy with the labor needed to do the work, then we're failing. Now, many will say education was never about providing workers. It was always about much more than that. So one example here in this part of the world is the numbers of graduates in terms of mathematics, information technology, natural sciences are much too low. And that is true of almost all of Europe and North America. North America, especially the US, can only get away through immigration. Otherwise, tech services and others would have long since run out of relevant talent. So I'm just trying to be hard on everybody involved here. When we're bitching about the education sector in Africa, we should also be looking at the education sector in other parts of the world. Quite a number of countries are not really stepping up to the game as is needed. So others have to make sure that youth get the opportunity to acquire the right skills, relevant skills, and more importantly, actually learn how to learn for the rest of their lives, because if there's one thing for sure, then skills only have a relevance for a number of years these days and have to be renewed and replaced several times in a lifetime. More specifically to your question about ALX, we're learning ourselves. I mean, this is now such a big machine with more than 250,000 learners at this moment in time. We're probably the largest educator or training company of digital talent in the world by now. And we have learned a thing or two about how to improve our own activities. So one of the things that we're doing right now is called University of the Future, where we are inviting learners at a younger age to already join ALX. So not after tertiary education, but already after secondary education. And we will still give them an opportunity to also get a university degree, but we try to bring them in at a much younger age and make them as relevant as they can be for this evolving job market. And I will have to talk about that in a moment again. But what we all are shooting for is an environment in which African youth has access to relevant competencies and skills in an efficient and not too time consuming system. I'm always, to use a British expression, flabbergasted for how long tertiary education in Africa takes. And then to get them to graduate into an environment where they don't have to japa off, as the Nigerians would say, to Canada or wherever to get a decent job and earn a decent income, but we have to make sure that they can do that here, right? And that's where Santech comes to play, but because we are definitely creating jobs in this tech service industry. But set Santech aside, the entire startup scene, the ecosystem of entrepreneurs in Africa that I'm very excited about, will play a key role. Not just obviously the founders, but those that will be employed through them. And employed won't always be formal employment. I mean, we're kind of a little bit almost manipulated by a Western view of one view of employment. So let's be very clear. If you look at ILO statistics, it's a minority in the world that has a formal labor contract in terms of traditional Western employment. That has never been the majority of people on this planet. So I think it's one of Africa's advantages, actually, that it is a much more agile environment with much more informal employment and much more much more agility towards a human cloud work lifestyle than, for example, an overaged continent like Europe.
One quick question off of that is, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. So the same way that China or Japan, for example, let's think of Japan. They were once where we were, right? They had a young population. They had tech invested, rather, they invested a lot in technology skills. They industrialized their economy. And then, you know, there was this boom and, you know, they were able to export lots of stuff. They were a producer, et cetera. And then, you know, gradually over time, you get to this point where now you have an aging population. The cost of labor is high, et cetera. And then now you have to look to somewhere else. Then the China comes up, then the India comes up. When we look at this from a cyclical standpoint and how to make sure that a continent or countries are prosperous in a continuous manner, is it just like a time and chance thing where we're saying, hey, look, right now it's the time for Africa, but one day maybe Africa, our population will start to decline and we'll go through all these different cycles. Are you seeing any ways in which countries are trying to mitigate against that? Maybe looking at present day Germany or an Italy or somewhere where there's this aging population, they're trying to fix that. How do you fix that? Because I anticipate that one day, maybe in two centuries or something, Africa might be in that same position. Is that a fixable problem?
Let me first of all say that I use these expressions all the time myself, but I also catch myself getting increasingly uncomfortable with them. What am I trying to say? Let's not use the word overaging if it was something negative. I mean, last I checked, the only way to live longer is to get older. And I assume we all want to live longer, right? So you know, age is not a bad thing to start off with. We have to get off that, you know, mindset, right? Well, it's easier for me because the older I get, the more I feel like, no, age is not so bad. Okay, second statement. There are some mitigation strategies and they're not working, quite frankly. Most countries in Western Europe, at least, have public discussions around people having to work longer before they can draw their pension, right? So even in my lifetime, and now in Germany, we've moved this from 65 to 67. Now there are discussions around extending it even further. And some people won't retire at all anymore. I mean, my mom passed away a little over a year ago, and I can say this so happily because my mom got to live till the age of 97. And she actually worked till 96. And she had a personal computer, she had a laptop, Whoa. She had one phone. She worked from an
office. What was she working on?
She was a translator. She translated books, English, German, German, English, and she was working in an office 2 days a week and 3 days a week from a home office. Can you imagine at 96? So, I mean, that was obviously an extreme case, but my point being, yeah, I mean, one mitigation strategy is people working longer, one statement. Second statement, one mitigation strategy is migration, or immigration into our countries. And a lot of that is happening, but it's politically very controversial. And there's a populist right-wing view that is getting stronger in most European and North American countries around. There has been enough immigration let's limit this. You will probably remember that the Brexit discussion was led under the headline of take back control, which meant take it away from, you know, EU institutions, but also meant limit immigration. Funny enough, it's not working, but it's a different story. So, but if your people don't want to work to the age of 100, and if you don't want more younger people to come from other countries, then there's actually only one solution. Now we're coming full circle, and that is you need to take the work to where the talent is. So, I mean, how else are you going to go about it? There's only so many logical solutions, which takes us back to this time for Africa. The African journey will have some similarities, especially with the India narrative, India story, and then some distinct different aspects to it. See, if you look at what happened in India, is the first jobs that got moved to India, the first processes were what we would now call low-value tactical BPO kind of work, right? Or contact and call center work and so on. And we've seen much of that already in Africa. I mean, come on. I mean, South Africa is a hub, major hub for BPO work. Kenya, what did you call it? Silicon Savannah? Is that what you call it? Yeah,
yeah, right? Silicon Savannah.
Yeah, so, but it's very unevenly distributed on the African continent. So I've just read a book about how digital work is distributed across Africa. And for example, if you look at the registrants on platforms like Upwork, about 80% stem from 5 African countries. So it's really, you know, whilst we and I tend to talk about a continent, if this was all, you know, the same, obviously it makes no sense, because it's like talking about Europe as if the UK was Turkey. No, it's not. The differences are huge between especially places like Germany and then countries in the south of Europe, which face very different challenges. Like Germany is running out of labor and the south of Europe has youth unemployment of significant numbers, right? And the differences across Africa are even more significant. I mean, you go to places like Nigeria, I like Kenya, I like South Africa, I like Ghana, I like Egypt, and you have a huge digital workforce. Then you go to other places, and you have to look long and hard, won't find the number of people that would justify the build up, for example, of a BPO industry. I've just spent 3 years in Malawi and Zambia the past 3 years building. I was managing director of Foundation Fostering Education there, building schools, secondary schools, and I haven't seen any relevant digital hubs in Malawi. So as much as I love this country, it's an amazing country, by the way.
I think one thing that I've loved about our conversation, Michael, as we come to the end of it, is how practical it's been. You've spoken to challenges that I'm going to face and think about decisions I'm going to think about as soon as we end this call. You know, these are everyday conversations. These are the challenges of our generation, I'd say. And I think I'm walking out of this conversation with a lot more confidence in where I see myself and where I see my role. And then mostly just appreciating the fact that I'm part of the African leadership community and I can lean on my African community. I can lean on my African networks that we've built over the course of college and just over the course of such conversations, Michael. And I think you and SAD Technologies are doing such a phenomenal job in directing us towards this new direction that we're going, providing answers to students, how to touch your education, but more so what you mentioned about the university of the future, right? Allowing younger students to step into this and understand what's happening in the world before they actually get into the world of work. And so thank you so much for your time here, Michael.
Happy to spend the time with you. Let me end with one more statement before I go off the virtual stage here. You should know, and you should be well aware of the fact that you're second to none in terms of your competitiveness at this moment in time. What I said earlier about how excited I got about the youth in China and India some 20 odd years ago when I first visited, it's not just me seeing this in Africa. We recently brought 4 Indian executives to Kigali, and we flew in talent from a number of African continents and introduced them. And after a week of spending time with our talent, these Indian executives looked at us and said, there's no way we would find such talent in India right now. You've got an amazing talent base here. And what they were referring to was not just the technical excellence and skills and competencies of our talent, but the fact that they're articulate, self-confident, self-aware, can ask questions, can actively listen. You know, to be honest, you're going to a services industry, into a certain work for a service company, you're interacting with clients, you can just not be a nerd anymore. You should be a nerd. Being a nerd is a good thing, but you have to be a smart and nerd with some communication skills. And that is the value proposition that we have right now. I also had an exchange with a German gentleman not long ago who I also met in Kigali at a public-private partnership event, and asked him, so what are you doing in Kigali? And he said, well, we are a photo editing company and we used to have 3 production sites in Asia, and some 3-4 years ago we decided we should have one in Africa, and we considered Nairobi and Kigali. And it took me only 2 weeks from my PC sitting at my desk in Germany to set up a legal entity in Kigali. It was very straightforward, and after 6 months, we had a location and 60 staff. Now after 3 years, we have 180 staff. And this is actually our most successful production site, and it's outperforming our 3 Asian sites. And I said, why do you think that is? And he said, well, there's one reason, and one reason only, it's the talent. And so I wanted to round up our conversation today and let you all know the world begins to understand it's not just the demographics that you have unlimited access to young human individuals, if you will, But the world begins to take note of the fact that there's amazing talent on this continent. And that word is getting out. And those who care to listen are coming to play.
Definitely. I think that's encouraging. Because fundamentally, when we think about the role that young people play in the economy, they bring ideas, they bring energy, they bring a nimbleness and adaptability to change that organizations need and society needs as well. So it's very encouraging also just to get that perspective from, you know, international business owners and organizations who are acknowledging that, hey, look, Africa isn't just all talk about this skills and talent thing, but these actual business results to show that setting up here makes sense. That is encouraging. And I think for everyone who is listening in, is currently trying to figure out how to build their skill set, where to go, how to make a difference. One thing I'm taking away from this conversation is that we are needed. And so keep going at it, keep learning that skill, upskill for sure. Don't just sit and watch ChatGPT take people's jobs, right? Upskill where necessary and follow your passions and do things with excellence. Because yeah, the world is your oyster, Africa. Thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure having you in the boardroom. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Lilley, it's been a privilege. And we wish you all the best with the work that you guys are doing at SandTech. For anyone who's listening and wants to get involved or know what they're doing, go check out Sand Technologies and also some of the other work that they're doing via ALX. ALX Africa, that's A-L-A-L-N-X. Thank you so much, Michael. Boniface Omina was my co-host today, and I am your other co-host, Sean Karanja. We appreciate your time here joining us in the boardroom. Have a fantastic week ahead.
Hey there, folks. We're wrapping up today's episode with a quick one from our sponsors, Nepal Tea Collective. Nepal Tea is a social enterprise based in New York that distributes the freshest organically grown teas to different parts of the world, directly sourced from smallholder farmers in the beautiful country of, you guessed it, Nepal. We're proud to be sponsored by them. And at the end of our episodes, we like to wind down. And we cannot think of a better way to wind down than with a cup of hot Nepal tea. So if you'd like to check them out, go and look them up at nepalteacollective.com. That's nepalteacollective.com for more information. See you on the next one, guys.